Hi, my name is Jo Marie Courtney. I'm a research scientist at the School of Medicine at University of Tasmania.
I've been sent to meet you by your sister, who says she loves you, but you couldn't be more different than her. How are you different?
Well, that's very true. I've always been very driven by science and inquiry, and she's always been very artistic. I've always known exactly what I want to do and followed that path. She's taken a while to find her ideal path, but we've both got there in the end.
Did you get on as kids?
Yes, most of the time. Probably as much as most siblings do.
But when you didn't get on, what was it like?
Oh, I think like most teenage girls. We could take each other in short doses, but no, we love each other and always have.
How did you know what you wanted to do?
I've just always loved science. I love music as well. And I remember having to choose, probably in high school, whether music or science was going to be my main passion. And I picked science. The exact type of science I was interested in changed over the years. I started off wanting to go to Antarctica and study penguins. And then at university, I got more interested in medical research and decided to follow that as a pathway. At the moment, I'm working in neuroscience, but I've had a bit of a broad background. My PhD is in developmental biology, which I got in London. I began in neuroscience, but I've also worked in respiratory research and now come back to working in neuroscience again.
Is it hard to flip back and forth like that between specialties?
It can be hard because you've got a whole different background to work in, but I've found that the actual skills in the laboratory transfer really nicely. So I've always been interested in working with cells, how cells communicate with each other, and that applies to lots of different areas of science.
From an outsider's point of view, when we look at the medical fields, we all tend to think of stuff to do with the brain as the most difficult, the most complicated. Is that what it's like inside?
I think there's some truth to the neuroscience being a particularly complex area. It's partly why I'm drawn to it. There's so much to discover. And probably people who study other organs might not agree with me. Everyone thinks their own area is the most important and the most interesting. But I was drawn right back to neuroscience because I find the brain's just a totally fascinating organ.
So what is the education that gets you there? Because obviously it's different to a standard medical doctor.
Mine was a much more broad scientific degree. And I really focused on genetics and cell biology and biochemistry. And at the time I went through, neuroscience was just starting out to become a big thing at UTAS. And so it wasn't really a subject that you took on its own. So my focus was really on how cells talk to each other and all of those processes. And then I've moved into applying that to neuroscience later on.
So how do the cells talk to each other? Surely you have a glib answer for that by now.
Many, many ways and many, many complex pathways that all intersect with each other. And that's one of the things I find really fascinating in science is that the same pathways that I studied as a developmental biologist, which were to do with how different organs were formed, the same pathways that are to do with respiratory disease, end up looking at those same communication pathways in neuroscience and looking at diseases like stroke and Alzheimer's disease. The body reuses those communication tools again and again.
Should we have a little look at your lab?
Yeah, why not? So this is one of the stem cell laboratories in here, which I work in quite a lot of the time. I do a couple of different projects in here using stem cells to grow human neurons to do testing for stroke treatments, but also we grow human parasites, which is the cell that our group is most interested in. And what they are little cells that sit on the capillaries, little tiny blood vessels all through your body, and they contract and relax to control the blood flow. So we're really interested in that control of blood flow and how that contributes to diseases in the brain.
My understanding of stem cells is that they're the basic cell that can become any other cell. How do you tell them to become a neuron?
We give them the same kind of signals that they would get in the human development. So we've learned what signals the brain gives, and then we replicate those signals in a dish.
What are they?
Various growth factors, things like insulin, hormones. There's a whole bunch of different things. We have to get quite a complex mixture of chemicals.
Where do you get stem cells themselves from?
There are scientific suppliers. The stem cells mostly come from the US. But once we grow them, they can just replicate them. We have stocks of them here and keep them growing for years.
Can I see a stock of stem cells?
I'd have to have a check, see if we've got any growing at the moment.
So from a fridge, Jo-Marie has removed a flat plastic lattice with lots of little tiny tubules bit into it. And in each tubule is a light pink fluid.
So this is we call a multi-well plate. In each well of this plate is a little ball of cells called a neurosphere. You can have a look at the microscope if you want.
But I can see like a little blob in there.
Yeah, it's a little blob. And what this is, these are were stem cells, and we've given them some signals to form, and they like to form together into a little ball, which we call a neurosphere. And these balls will grow to be up to about half a millimetre to a millimetre across. And then once they get to that stage, they've developed a lot of the signals they need to become neurons. And then we can plate them out into other wells and start to turn them into proper neurons.
And what are you going to do with this particular batch of neurons once they're grown?
These belong to one of our PhD students, and she's doing some experiments to find out how these neurons react to a simulated stroke in culture. So we'll deprive them of oxygen, deprive them of nutrients, the same as things that happens to your brain when you have a stroke, and potentially try out some different treatments on it.
What sort of treatments are we looking at, or is that all proprietary at this point?
Oh, I can't give you specifics. We've got a range of different drugs that we're trying, things that have shown some potential to work, but no one has often been able to test them in actual human neurons in a culture system. So this is a new way of looking at stroke research. So these are parasites.
They're not parasites, parasites.
Pericytes. So these are the cells that sit on our capillaries and control our blood flow.
And what's going to happen to these little parasites?
So one of the things I'm working on at the moment with the parasites is an interesting little project. We're looking at the effects of green tea, because it's been shown in the epidemiological studies that people who drink a lot of green tea have a lower risk of stroke than other people. And no one really knows why, but green tea is known to have a bunch of health benefits. So we're doing a little bit of an experiment with these guys to see whether green tea might have an effect on them. Because what we know about parasites and stroke is that even though stroke is usually the blockage of a large blood vessel, the parasites that are downstream of that, when they lose that blood supply, they tend to contract tightly around the capillaries and then they die. So even if that large blood vessel can be opened up again through clot-busting drugs or through surgery, the capillaries still stay clamped shut because the parasites have died and they can't relax anymore. So we're hoping that we can find a way to prevent them from dying so quickly. Maybe we could give something. So while a patient is waiting to have that surgery or that early stages, we might be able to extend the window of time that they can get that treatment and potentially have lower effects of a stroke.
So while we were in the elevator, another member of staff was asking you about a song that you're going to be doing later. What's that all about?
So I've recently started a musical theatre society in Hobart. We just got going exactly 4 weeks ago. Yeah, we've got a rehearsal tonight, and there's one of my colleagues who's joined in and was trying to make sure she was going to come along and have a sing with us tonight.
Aren't there enough musical theatre societies in Hobart?
There are plenty of really fabulous musical theatre groups in Hobart, but one thing I found is, after I finished my first degree, I moved over to the UK, and I spent 13 years living in London, and while I was over there, I'd always loved musical theatre, but I'd been focusing on my science, so I'd never really had any training. I thought, well, I need to meet new people in this new city that I'm living in, and I found a musical theatre society close to where I lived, and so I went along and joined, and that theatre society was fabulous. They had this way of working, which is fairly common in the UK, where once you become a member of a society, you are included in all of their shows, and they just choose their shows and expand the ensemble based on their membership. So when I came back to Hobart about 10 years ago, I thought, well, I'd like to join a group like that here, and I found that there wasn't one. There are plenty of fabulous groups that put on fabulous musicals and lots of very talented people, but nothing like a society that is a group that sticks together and does the same cast, and that as someone who doesn't have a whole lot of training can join in as a member of the ensemble and develop and learn within the society. So I thought, well, if I want to do that, I should start it.
So it's a more inclusive model rather than it being one where you have to try out for things and get rejected or whatever. You're automatically in.
Absolutely. We do hold auditions for membership. As long as you can hold a tune and deliver a line, you can become a member.
So what show are you hoping to put on first?
Well, right now, because we've just started and we're building up our membership, we're planning to put on a cabaret-style show early next year. We haven't settled on the specifics of exactly where and when, but we're hoping for February. We're calling the show Stories of Tonight, and it'll be a celebration of musical theatre, so we can pick songs from across the musical theatre repertoire that suits the people that we have that come along. And then hopefully after that, we'll have built enough of a group up that we'll be able to tackle some actual musicals.
Is there a particular song from a particular musical that you're keen on for yourself?
Yeah, the one I most want to be able to sing at the moment, which I'm struggling a little on the high note, so I'm working hard to be able to do it, is Me and the Sky from Come From Away.
What about that appeals to you?
I love the character. It's based on one of the pilots who was diverted to Canada during 9/11, but she was also the first female captain for American Airlines. So it tells her story from when she was a little girl who wants to become a pilot to dealing with the sexism through the 80s of the male pilots who didn't want a female pilot, right through to her successes and then ending on what happened on 9/11, and it's just this fabulous, fabulous song that goes through the highs and lows of the emotions, and I love that.
So do you reckon that might end up being the first musical you do, or is there something maybe a little bit more beginner level for your new company?
Yeah, I think Come From Away is a little ambitious, and I don't think we're going to get the rights anytime soon. But that's the fun thing about doing the cabaret-style shows every now and again is you can sing these songs that we're unlikely ever to be able to actually perform the full musical of.
Well, good luck, Jo Marie. It's been lovely meeting you, and the joy on your face as you talk about musicals is quite delightful. Who are you going to handball me onto?
The most interesting person I have met in the last year is a woman called Svenja Kratz. She is a bio artist. She works at the School of Creative Arts, and she works with biological materials to create artworks.